All right, Shabbos, say good morning.
First of all, yashar koach to everyone for being here. Baruch Hashem, alafum, tzara agra. Beautiful to have such a chevra on such a day. All right, Shabbos, let's begin. We have a beautiful, beautiful gemara today. So today's daf is Nun Aleph, 51, and we are picking up on Nun Amud Beis. So we actually left off with Rav Yosef. So we left off six lines up from the bottom. So remember, again, we were dealing with an really fascinating and riveting case about a statement of Rav. And Rav said that an ishes ish tzricha limchos, an ishes ish has to go ahead and lodge an objection when someone else is occupying her land. So we're trying to figure out, so who does she have to make a macha against? So first we tried to posit that maybe yesterday was her husband. But then we discussed for a variety of reasons, it's difficult to construct that case. So Rav Yosef says, Rav Yosef mali olam ba'acher. Rav Yosef says, no, we're talking about someone other than her husband. Ukigon, so we'll say, so what's the case? And remember, we started out by saying, oh, it must refer to acher. The reason why we discounted that case was why? Was because at the end of the day, normally we say that a woman doesn't have to go ahead and make a ma'acha when it comes to acher. Why? Because she normally assumes on her husband. She normally relies on her husband to make that ma'acha. So let's say, suppose I watch this. The individual in question was living on the land for a little bit during the lifetime of the husband. And for 3 years after the death of the husband. Therefore, again, this individual has established chazaka 3 years after the death of the husband. And if the isha doesn't make a macha, that is demonstrative that what? That this individual is the owner of the land. Now, why? Because he has a migo. What's the migo? Migo di boy amrle anos abinta minach. So what's that? Because he has a migo. He could have said, I sold it from you. Excuse me, I bought it from you. Ki amrle nami at zabinta le bizabna nehile mehemen. So what's that? He has a migo. The claim that he's making is, wife, you sold this to your husband, your husband sold it to me. The reason why he's believed in that claim is because he could have said what? He could have just said, I bought it directly from you. So says Gemara Gufa, Amar Rav, in machzik, in benichse, ish es ish. So Rav said, you can't make a chazaka in the property of a married woman, with bosetap of nonalif, dayane gola omra, and the dayanim of the gola. The diaspora judges said, Machzikin, you can make a chazaka in the nechasim, in the property of a married woman. Amar Rav, Rav said, halacha kedayane gola. Rav said, the halacha follows the dayanim of the gola, and therefore you can make a chazaka in the property of a married woman. Amru lei, Rav Kana, Rav Asi, Rav Hadr Beimar Mishmaite. So Rav Kana, Rav Asi said to Rav, Rebbe, have you retracted your ruling? Now you're saying that you can make a chazaka in the property of a married woman. Mistabra Amri Kedrav Yosef, to which Rav said, no. I'm referring to a specific case, like the case of Rav Yosef, namely, where someone made Miktas Chazaka while the husband was alive, and then settled on the land for 3 years after the husband died. That's in your Mikaika Chazaka on the property of a married woman. And Rabbi say, this is indeed Halacha L'maisa. So listen to this. Shulchan Aruch, Evan Ezer, Hilchos Ksuvos, Simen Pei Zayin Sif Beis. Get ready, this is Halacha L'maisa. If you try to go ahead and create a chazaka in the property of a married woman, Shabbos said, let's say again, so Mrs. Schwartz, I go ahead and I live on her land for 3 years, and she does not contest my residency on the land, what's the halacha? Lo also lo chazaka. Rabbos said, there is no chazaka. Why is there no chazaka? Because but Mrs. Schwartz never objected. Why didn't Mrs. Schwartz object, Rabbos said? Why not? Right? Because she relied on the fact that her husband was going to make a macha. Now the fact that her husband didn't, I will say this, Howard mentioned this point to me yesterday after the shir. She's supposed to say, understand, the whole concept of chazaka only applies in a situation where someone could have or should have objected. But if someone has a reasonable, Yaakov, you're the only attorney here today. Excuse, I could have done that myself. Right, Nathan's here also, right? Too early, I'm sorry. I had no retainer, that's the problem. Okay, so the idea is, what, justification? That was Nathan? Right, okay, good. Good, if somebody has a plausible justification, I could have been a lawyer, right? Somebody who had plausible justification as to why they did not lodge an objection. Tenabos says no chazak. So the Shulchan Aruch is saying is like this: If at the end of the day, a married woman doesn't object to someone living on her land, she has a very good justification for that, a plausible justification, which is I relied on my husband. So her lack of objection does not solidify my chazaka. But says the Shulchan Aruch, Elaim came hichzik bahen shlosha shanim achar mos baila. Let's say if at the end of the day her husband died, and I still live, so Mrs. Schwartz's husband died, and I live on her land for 3 years after the death of her husband, now I've established chazaka. Why? Because obviously after the death of her husband, she has no husband to rely on to object to some stranger living on her land. Therefore, if she is quiet and she says nothing, I establish chazaka. And I will say that indeed is halacha l'maisa. Good. Weiter. Says the Gemara. Nor could a woman go ahead and establish a chazaka on her husband's land. Rabbi Osai, now what the Gemara seems to be saying is the following. So my wife lives on my property. Let's say another field. My wife is working a particular field for 3 years. She can't claim at the end of those 3 years, I am the owner of that property. Vaharaya, what's the proof to that? You, my husband, never objected to my residency and use of the land. So the Gemara tells me that such a tiny like that does not establish chazak. It says, Pshita. I mean, what's the chiddush in that? Kevon de islay mizone hu de ka'achla. So we'll say that's obvious. Why is that obvious? Because since at the end of the day, we'll say she gets mizonos. Right? She gets mizonos, meaning she is entitled ultimately again. She's entitled ultimately again to support. Shabosai, meaning, remember, the other time you can't go ahead and claim chazaka is when you have a reason to be on that property. So the same way that a sharecropper can't claim chazakas because he was on land. Why? Because we tell him, you have a reason to be on that land. Therefore, lemaisa again, so too a woman can't go ahead and claim chazaka because at the end of the day she gets mizonos, to which the Gemara says, lo tzricha, deyicha la'ara achrisi l'mizona. Rabbi says, listen to this. What's the case? The case over here is where the husband says to his wife, listen, I'm going to support you. You get mizonos from field A, and meanwhile what? Meanwhile, she's been occupying field B. So we'll say, so now she has a taina, because now she's not occupying land that lamaisa she's getting mizonos from. This is a separate parcel of land. Yet, what does the Mishnah rule? Even in that case, what Rabbi Osai, she cannot claim chazaka. Shamis mina, what do you learn from here? Hamocher sada le'ishtal kansa, velo aminan. I'm sorry, I skipped the line. So Gemara says, "Lo yicha, lo tzicha, diyacha la arachri, see the mizona." So fine. So we'll say. So therefore, bottom line, with the great Gemara's understanding, this ruling of the Mishnah is the following: that halacha l'maisa, if a woman is living on a parcel of land that is not the land, from which her husband is supporting her, the novelty in the Mishnah is she still can't claim chazaka. And we'll say the logic here is very simple. What's the logic? That a husband doesn't necessarily mind if his wife uses property that is his, even if that's not the property that is designated for her mizonos. So his lack of protest about the use of her land is in no way demonstrative of her ownership of that land. Simple ruling of the Mishnah. Now, I will say, now the Gemara is an interesting diuk. Ha raya yesh. Now, I will say, now, what this would seem to indicate is the following. What happens, if you look at the Rashbam, Haraya Yesh, Im Yesh Lo Shtar Mechira Mibal Havi Mikha Kayim. Now, also, what we can infer from this is the following. Let's say she were to produce a shtar, and in that shtar it says that what? That her husband sold her the land. Her husband sold her the land. If she were to produce such a shtar, then what? Then it would seem that Lemaisa, she would be the rightful owner of the land. So the Gemara says, ha raya yesh, leima, but one second. Even if she produces a shtar that says that he sold her the land, why can't he counter the shtar with the following statement? Listen, some of this is not going to be so politically correct, but whatever. Well, I mean, don't use it at a Shema Brachas. Let's say it like that. So the Gemara says the following. It's also reflective of different societal realities. It says the Gemara, I lima ligaluye zuye hu debai. So we'll say, so why can't they claim the following? I didn't really sell my wife the land. But you know why I engaged in this transaction? because I had a strong feeling that she was hiding money from me. So therefore what? What's the best way to discover if my wife is hiding money from me? Sell her something. And therefore again, if I sell her something and suddenly again she has money for that, that shows that she was hiding away money this entire time. Now, boss, now understand, you'll say to yourself, well, what's the husband's business if the maid says she's hiding money? It is his business. Why? Because if he's providing her with mezonos, then remember again that Takanas Chazal is, he is entitled to Maaseh Adel. He's entitled to her earnings. So says the Gemara, she produces a shtar that says, that her husband sold her field A. He contests the validity of the shtar by simply saying what? By saying, I didn't really sell you the shtar. I was just trying to discover your hidden cash. Shtar said, what do you see from here? Hamocher sada l'ishto kansa velo amina l'giluye zuzehu deboin. Well, said, what do you see from here? You see from here that if she produces a shtar, that she becomes the rightful owner of the land, and a husband can't claim after the fact that the only reason I sold you the land was to discover the fact that you had hidden money, and therefore again, the validity of, and therefore he calls into question the validity of the transaction. Rather, if she produces a shtar that says she is the rightful owner, then what? She in fact is the rightful owner. Which is low. Ema haraya yesh b'shtar matana. Maybe that's what we'll say. Maybe the only time that a woman could produce a shtar and she becomes the rightful owner of the land is when she produces a shtar matana. Because we'll say, if he gifts her the land, then what? Then that is a raya that is really conveying ownership of the land to her. Because remember, with the shtar matana, there's no good reason why the husband would be conveying that to her, unless of course what? Unless of course the mamash wants to convey to her ownership. But perhaps again, if he sells it to her, the only motivation for the sale is to discover her hidden funds. Amrli Rav Nachman the Rav Huna, lo hava mar gabon ba'arta b'tchumer. Listen to this. So Rav Nachman says to Rav Huna, Rebbe, you were not with us when that evening, when we were by the Tchuma, when we were by the Beis Medrash, by the Tchum, the Aminon Mili Mal Yasa, when we spoke about such wonderfully important things. Amrlei, my Mili, which is another way of saying that's what? They're saying what? You weren't in the Beis Medrash when we talked about this stuff. Right? In other words, right? You weren't, right? I don't know if they could claim snow in Pumbudisa, but Lamai say, whatever the reason you weren't there, maybe in intense heat, they could claim Pumbudisa. Says the Gemara, well, Amar Le'imayimili Ma'yasa. So tell me, what beautiful words did you learn? So what he says, Amrisu, we said, Hamocher Sada Le'ishto Kansa, Falo Armina Le'giluye Zuzihu Deboi. We learned in the Beis Medrash that evening that if you sell a field to your wife, she has in fact acquired the field, Kansa. B'lo aminon, and we do not say, bless you, legiluye zuzehu deboy. So we learned in the Beis Medrash by the Tchum that if a man sells a field to his wife, that is indeed a legitimate sale. And we do not say that his motivation in that is to reveal hidden cash that she may be hiding. So the Gemara says, Amrlei, Pshita, is that not obvious? And I was also, of course, if a man goes ahead and sells his wife a field, then of course the sale is valid. And I was saying, now watch this. Because take away the money. Dal zuze mehache, v'tikni b'shtar. I was saying, this is actually such a fascinating statement. Of course, I will say, if a man goes ahead and sells his wife a field, she of course is the rightful owner of that land. Why? Because it will say, even if you take money out of this transaction, there's still what? There's still a shtar. And after all, did we not learn? Milo Tinan, did we not learn? Nechasim Shiyeh Shal Machrayis, Niknim B'Kesef, U'Bishtar, U'Bichazakov. I will say, did we not learn that one of the ways to convey ownership, right? There are three ways to convey ownership of real property, and that's how, Kesef, money, Shtar, document, Chazakah, proprietary act. So we'll say, which is something very interesting. We were discussing the idea that when you sell your wife property, then the maaseh, we're calling into question the validity of that sale. How can you call into question? Why would you undermine the validity of that sale? Because maybe I don't really have in mind to sell a property. What am I trying to do? I'm trying to discover her hidden money. Right? So I'm trying to bring it out. I'm trying to bring out that hidden money through a transaction. So the Gemara says, forget about money for just a moment. As soon as you draw up a shtar with your wife to convey ownership of the property, then by definition, what? You've conveyed ownership of the property via the shtar. Right? Via the shtar. So forget about the kesef. So of course the transaction should stand. Amar Leis, you said in 1 second. Falav itmar Allah. Did we not say, Rabosai, when do we say that shtar conveys ownership by itself? Amar Shmuel, lo shanu elo b'shtar matana, aval b'shtar mecher, lo kana ad shiyitin lo dameha. Oh, Rabosai, this is actually really quite fascinating. Rabosai, you should know, this is the exciting part, just about Gemara in general, right? You begin talking about one subject, and it's mamish like a Talmudic roller coaster. You have absolutely no idea, but here's, it's like one of those roller coasters where, you know, you're going in the dark, see mamish, you have no idea, upside down, right side up, standing up, sitting down. Pashat have no idea what to expect. And Chazal bombard you with one Talmudic treat after another. See here, we begin with Halachos of Chazoka, Adam Ishto, and now we're getting into the Kishkas of Kinyanim. So listen to this, it's actually very important. When do we say that a shtar conveys ownership, Rabosai? Meaning when we say that Nechasim Sheshen Achrayis, that real property, is conveyed with a shtar, what does that mean? Says the Gemara. Meaning, when do we say that shtar by itself conveys ownership? That's a shtar matona. Rabosai, because what's the chap with a matona? A matana doesn't have any other mechanism associated with the conveyance, with the kinyan, other than the shtar. That's when you say the shtar has the ability to convey full ownership. But Rabosai, at the end of the day, when you're selling something to someone, Rabosai, when I sell you something, what really conveys the transfer? Money. What's the role of the shtar? Raya. Proof, right? So says the Gemara, one second. If we're dealing over here, right, when it says the Gemara says Loshan, let me read that again. So the Gemara says Loshan, Ela B'Shtar Matana. So when do we say the Shtar affects a transaction? That's the Shtar Matana, about the Shtar Mecha. Rabbo say, if you're selling something to someone, Lo Kana Achi Yitin Lo Dameho. Rabbo say, the purchaser does not go ahead and acquire the item until there's a transfer of money. The Shtar itself, ultimately, again, is the Shtar Raya. Velav Mosiv Rav Hamnuna. But yet, did Rav Hamnuna not ask on that? Bishtar Ketzad, what's the case of Shtar? Kasav lo, al haniyar, o al acheres. We'll say if you go ahead and you write on a piece of niyar, now niyar literally means paper, but we know again their paper means parchment, o al acheres, or on a piece of pottery, afa pi she'en bo shave pruda. Now we'll say, remember again, the Shtar itself need not be written on something that is a shavar pruta. So if you go ahead and you write something on something that is not a shavar pruta, and what do you write on it? Sodai. Mechur lecha. You say, my field is sold to you. Sadai kinuya lecha. My field is acquired to you. Hareze mechura unesuna. Ultimately, again, the field is sold and given. So Rabbi says, what do you see from here? You see that lemaisa, Rabbi says, that what? That here, the Gemara's phrasing that a shtar works even by what? Even by a mecher, even without money. Well, like, you understand like how riveting this is, right? Like this is edge of your seat riveting, because this gets into the very mechanics of shtar. This is, well, like, you have to understand something, that a discussion like this fundamentally shapes the nature of transactional law. What the Gemara is asking over here is, do you need transfer of funds in order to affect a transaction, or is the giving of a shtar for both? So you understand this fund. Seth, you're going
to
say something?
Does the shtar itself need to be conveyed?
Shtar definitely needs to be conveyed, absolutely, because without the conveyance of the document, meaning there has to be, let's say like this, oh, just like for any, tell me if this is correct. Well, it is correct because I'm giving the shear, so it's going to be by definition whatever is going to be correct. I get to shape reality. I love it. I get to shape reality. I feel like I'm vested with such authority. Just like for a contract to be enforceable, there has to be consideration. Correct? Remember that from my accounting days. Has to be consideration. So it's the same thing in halacha. There has to be some level of consideration. Now in halacha, the threshold for consideration may be much less. The consideration may just be the handing over of the document, but there has to be something. So therefore, I will say, watch this. So you see from here that again, a transaction can be affected, a mecher can be affected, just by the conveyance of shtar, without what? Even without money. Rabbi, you hear what's happening over here? They're asking kasha on top of kasha. For whom if arikla? B'mocher tzadei b'meirasa. Oh, this is amazing. No. Bottom line, what the Gemara says is the following. Under normal circumstances, in order for a transaction to be binding, there has to be a conveyance of money. Meaning shtar by itself will not go ahead and affect the transaction. The one exception to that rule, the Gemara says, is when someone is selling inferior land. They're both saying, now what does that mean? Now, if I'm looking to offload property, it's in my interest that what? that I offload it as soon as possible, which is, I am willing to commit myself to the transfer of ownership, even with just the shtar, even without consideration. So I said, this is what we call mochas edet neiras. I have an inferior piece of land. I finally find the buyer. I'm happy to offload this as quickly as possible. I'm willing to allow, ultimately, again, for the shtar to affect the conveyance of ownership from me to Reuven. But under normal circumstances, Rabbi Osai, in the case, ultimately, again, of a mecher, there's going to have to be an exchange of funds. Which Rabbi Osai, so therefore, again, what's coming out of here is the following. If you are conveying something via matana, so matana, a gift, can be conveyed through shtar, because the matana doesn't require any other consideration except for the conveyance of the shtar. By a mecher, we normally assume that what? That you require money, unless, of course, you're trying to offload inferior property. If you're trying to offload inferior property, then even, again, just the basic conveyance of the shtar is enough to go ahead and allow you to transfer ownership. But I will say, what this does open the door for is the following. What this opens the door is for an agreement between parties. In other words, I will say, let's say I'm not selling inferior land, but for whatever the reason, it is in my best interest, or it is in our best interest, to convey ownership now, so parties can stipulate amongst themselves that the conveyance of the ownership will take place through the mechanism of the shtar. But the idea is, in the absence of that explicit agreement, it is only the shtar will be a raya, and the transfer of property is really only accomplished through the conveyance of funds. So the margos right there. I'm sorry?
Is it the funds and
the shtar? Okay, so no, remember, the funds by itself could affect transfer of property, because kesef is one of the ways that you could acquire karka. So again, once I have kesef, I don't need the shtar. The case of shtar, meaning when we talk about that karka could be acquired with shtar, kesef, shtar, and chazaka, so kesef, shtar, and chazaka, that shtar is really a shtar matana. That's what it means. But the idea, so shtar, when it comes to kesef, will be a shtar rayo, unless, of course, it's one of these extreme cases where it's understood that the agreement of the parties is to convey ownership through the shtar. But Ravashi says, b'matana b'kesh lipnava. Well, see, Ravashi has another interesting idea. Baruchatu Adonai, Eloheinu melech olam shehakol
nihyeh
b'dvaro. Amen. Ravashi says, matana b'kesh lipnava. We'll say, the case over here, there's actually a case of matana. It's actually a case of matana. As well, say, now one second. The case over there we were talking about was sadai mechuru lecha, sadai nisrunu lecha. I feel the soul to you. Rav Ashi says, in fact, that's also a case of matana. I v'lama kasav lo b'lashon mecher. We'll say, but if I'm giving someone a gift, why am I writing it as a sale? Kedei liathos kocho. I will say, in order to what? In order to go ahead and intensify the koach of the mekabel. The Rebbe says it's actually very interesting. If I want to give someone a gift, but I want to give them a powerful gift, then how do I do that? I frame the gift as a sale. The Rebbe says, what does that entitle the recipient to? That entitles the recipient to the following. That should, for whatever reason, one of my creditors seize his land in satisfaction of the debt. The Rebbe says, so watch this case. I borrowed $1,000 from Reuven, and I gifted a piece of land to Shimon. Now, technically speaking, because that gift occurs after the loan, that land has a lien against it from Reuven, which means, should I default, Reuven has the right to go after and seize the land that I gifted to Shimon. Now, if I want to give Shimon a gift with real power, what I do is, Rabbi Osai, what? Is I make him into a purchaser. By making him into a purchaser, what that does is, in the event that my creditor Reuven seizes the land from my gift recipient Shimon has the right to what? Shimon has the right to come back to me and ask to be made whole for the land that was taken. Now, also, under normal circumstances, if you are the recipient of a gift and that gift gets seized by the gift giver's creditor, you have no recourse. The only recourse you have is if the gift giver vests you with that responsibility. Very interesting. I borrowed money from my Eved, and then I emancipated him. Right? I wrote a shtar that Rashbam brings down that I emancipated him, or I borrowed money from my wife, and then a man borrowed money from his wife, and then he divorced her. What's the halacha? Ein lahen alav klum. I will say, neither of these people have any level of recourse against the borrower. What does this mean? My time. Lav mishum darmina legilu yezuzi hu deboy. Also listen to this. Why? Because we assume that when I borrowed money from the Eved, or I borrowed money from the Isha, I did not have in mind to mishabed myself. Rather, I did this in order to what? In order to show that they were in fact hiding money. That they had been. Where does a man's wife ultimately again have money to lend? Where does the Eved have money to lend? If not, of course, because they are stashing away money. So says the Gemara. Ava, so the Gemara says, in that case is different. Hasam, tiloni chalei l'shevuye nafshe, eved lova l'ish mavel. Well, so that case is different. Why is that case different? Because it's clear that a man would never want to make himself indebted to his wife, and a man would never want to make himself indebted to his eved. These are unnatural relationships of indebtedness, and therefore it's clear that no comments on it, right? And therefore it's clear that what? And therefore it's clear that Lamaise is only doing this for the purpose, ultimately, again, of discovering hidden amounts of cash. Shalach Rav Huna bar Avin. Hamocha sadeh le'ishto kansav. So we'll say, now we go back. Rav Huna sent to bar Avin. So if a man sells a field to his wife, she has in fact acquired it. Amud Beis. Uba ochal peros. Now we'll say, this is a very interesting case. I sell a field to my wife. Now we'll say, a man sells a field to his wife. So we'll say, so that, number one, so remember, the fundamental discussion we were dealing with is, in general, when you sell property to your wife, we'll say, how do we view that transaction? Do we view that as a legitimate transaction, or do we view it as a mechanism by which to discover if a woman is hiding money? So here you have Rav Huna bar Avin. Rav Huna bar Avin is saying that if a man sells a field to his wife, number one, the transaction is legitimate. That's number one. I will say, now, interestingly enough, furthermore, I will say, the husband has the right to go ahead and eat the peros of that field. The Rebbe will say, now that's not such a chiddush. Why? Because the husband has the right to eat peros of any property that his wife has in the marriage. So the Rashbam points out, this is no different were she to inherit. Let's say her father were to die, and there are no other surviving relatives. The wife inherits. She now has this property. The husband has the right to eat the peros of the property. Now we'll say, now the novelty in this case, this is a great return on investment. Why? Because what's happening? He's going ahead and he's selling the property, and now what? And now he gets to eat the peros of that very property. Says the Gemara, Baram. So the Gemara says, Baram, Rabbi Abba, Rabbi Avohu, the Chol Gedoli Hadar, so Rabbi Abba and Rabbi Avohu, all the Gedoli Hadar Amru, they all said, B'matana b'kesh litnola. They all say, this is not a case of a sale. In reality, again, this is a case, ultimately, again, of a gift. Look at the Rashbam for just a moment. B'matana b'kesh litnola. V'lo yocha peros kidamina l'kaman b'matana kan. Savina ba'ocha peros. So we'll say, all the Gedoli Hadar said no. His intention over here was not to go ahead and sell it to her. Rather, it was to give it to her as a gift. V'lama kas avla l'shum mecher. So we'll say, if that's the case, then why did he go ahead and give it to her as a gift? I'm sorry, if his intention was to give it to her, was to give it to her as a gift, why did he phrase it as a sale? Kedei liyafos es kocha. We'll say, all of this was what? In order to go ahead and intensify or better her position. Because we'll say that at the end of the day, she's receiving something as a sale and not as a gift. And remember what happens? That gives her recourse should this property be seized by the husband's creditors. So we'll say, so what the Gemara essentially is saying is, there's no raya over here. Everyone agrees that a husband could go ahead and gift his wife property. And everyone agrees that when he gifts her property, that gift stands. The fundamental machlokes of both sides, in which case, is in a case where ultimately, again, the husband sells property to his wife. That's when there's a machlokes. Because we'll say, under that circumstance, the shayla is the sale really valid, or is the sale meant just to discover if she has any hidden cash? So it says the Gemara Meisir is a kasha. Lova mina ove, mina eved v'shichrero. If a person borrowed money from his eved and then emancipated the eved, or mina isha v'girsha, or he borrowed money from his wife and then he divorced her, Ein lahen alav klum. Both said they have no claim against him. In other words, that he is not on the hook. There's no shibur abasu. There's no shibur against his property. My time. What's the reason? Lav nishum da amri legaluye zuzehu deboy. Both say, is that not because he's doing it in order to discover if they have any hidden cash? In other words, both say that at the end of the day, the reason why the Gemara is bringing this up is because what it's trying to show is that whenever a husband engages in a transaction with his wife, the intention of that transaction is just to be able to discover if there are any hidden funds, to which the Gemara says, no, 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 shiny hasam, tilo lishvi inish eved lova leish malva. We'll say that case is different. You can't bring a right from that case. Why? Because we'll say these would be unnatural circumstances where a man would make himself meshubad. In other words, a man is not going to go ahead and make himself indebted to his eved, nor is he going to go to make himself indebted to his wife. Amar Rav, so we'll say, here we go. Amar Rav said, Hamokha sadal ishto kansav abal ochabero. So we'll say, now again, we need to resolve this. At the end of the day, what happens when a man sells property to his wife? Is that considered to be a legitimate sale? Or do we say the entire purpose of that sale is just to discover hidden funds? So Rav said, if a man goes in and sells property to his wife, she acquires the field, and number two, Vabalo Choperos. And I will say, remember, these two statements go hand in hand. If the woman acquires the field, then what? Then the husband eats peros. But Matana, on the other hand, if he gives her a gift, Kansa, then I will say, bless you. Then she acquires the field. Ve'ein habal ochel peres. I'm saying it's actually very interesting. In Rav's worldview, so if he sells the field, the sale stands, and the husband eats peros. If he gifts her the field, then what? The gift stands. But in the case of a gift, a husband does not go ahead and get peros. Rabbi Eliezer says, echad zeh ve'echad zeh kansa. So Rabbi Elazar agrees with Rav that both the case of a sale and the case of a gift will work, but holds that in both of those cases the husband is not entitled to peros. Rabbi Elazar will say paskin like Rabbi Elazar, namely that in both the cases of a gift as well as a sale the transaction will stand, but in neither of these cases is the husband entitled to peros. Omri Rab Amru Le Rabban Ukva for Rabbi Nechemya Bnei Banse Durav Chista. Bnei Banse Durav Chista. So Rabbi was saying, Rabban Ukva, Maruk writes Rabban Ukva, Rabbi Nechemya, and Rabbi Nechemya, who were the sons of the daughter of Rav, said to Rav Chista, the grandchildren of Rav, said to Rav Chista, Shavak Marav Ravi Va'avid Kizutri. How can you go ahead and cast aside the opinions of the great ones and conduct yourself like the small ones? And as I will say, they were giving him Musar. They were giving Rav Chista Musar for passing like Rabbi Elazar and not like Rav. Rav was greater than Rabbi Elazar. Rabbi Elazar was one of the Talmidim of Rav. So if you look at the Rashbam says, Kirav Ravi Avdi, Rabbi Yochanan Sheyuch Haveru Shal Rav. So we'll say, ultimately again, how can you go ahead and cast aside the position of Rav and instead take the position of Rabbi Elazar? Amarle va'ana nami kirav ravi avdi. To which he responded, I am also, Chris responded, I am also passing like the great ones. How so? Dechi asa Ravin am Rabbi Yochanan. Because when Ravin came, he said, Rabbi Yochanan, echad zeh ve'echad zeh kansa ve'ein haba'a ocheperos. He will say, Rabbi Yochanan also passed like Rabbi Elazar, namely, that in both the case of a matana as well as a mechar, the transaction stands, but in neither of those cases, we'll say, is the husband not entitled to pay. So we'll say, what is the halacha? Here we go. Amar Rava. We'll say, here we go. Hilchasa, the halacha is, hamocher sada leishto lo kansa. So we'll say, halacha number one, a man who sells a field to his wife, the transaction does not stand. She does not acquire the field. V'habal ochel peros. Now, boss, we're going to see for a moment the inherent contradiction in this statement. If a man sells a field to his wife, the transaction, right, the sale is not good, and the baal eats peros. Okay, so obviously, we'll talk about that in just a moment. B'matana kansa, if he gives her a gift, matana kansa, if he gives her a gift, the gift stands. Ve'ein habal ochel peros. I will say the gift stands, and a husband is not entitled to peros. The Gemara says tarti. It doesn't make sense. I will say the first statement is inherently contradictory. If you tell me that when a man sells a field to his wife, that the sale is not good, then how can you say that's what? That he has peros. That's a contradictory statement. I will say, in other words, saying that he has peros means what? That the sale is good, right? She owns the property, but he gets only peros. How can you say the sale is not good, but he eats peros? Low cash. We'll say it's not a contradiction. Listen to this. Kan b'maos timunin, kan b'maos sheinat timunin. We'll say everything depends on how she pays for the field. If she pays for the field with what we call maos timunin, monies that the husband did not know about until this point in time. If she goes ahead and she pays for the field from an offshore account from the Caymans, right? She goes in and she pays, right? She pays for the field from her offshore account. Then Abbas said, that's most timunin. Then what? Then the halacha is the transaction does not work. Right, the sale is not valid. I will say why? Because it's clear that what was his intention with this sale? To discover hidden monies. Now that he discovered hidden monies, mission accomplished, the sale is not binding. On the other hand, if she pays for this field, money, right, from her savings account that she had in the same bank, you know, with their joint account, monies that he knew about, therefore, I will say in that case, the sale will be binding because he knows about these monies. The sale will be binding. She will acquire the field. And once she acquires the field, what's Rabbi Osai? Once she acquires the field, then he acquires the payros in that field as well. Dam Rav Yehuda said, Ma'os temunin lo kansa. Ma'os shinan temunin kansa. Rabbi Yehuda says this explicitly, that if she pays for the field with hidden monies, the transaction is not good. If she pays for the field with monies that were known about, then the transaction is good. And I will say again, halach lemaisa, this is in fact how the Shulchan Aruch paskins. This is in Evan Ezra Simon Pehei, Silchos Ksubas, Simon Tes, Hamochar Karka Leishto. I will say if a man sells a field to his wife, Im Hayu Hamoos Shelach Chaban Ezakarka Me'abal Gilu, Im Yedun Lebal, Kansa, if a woman pays with monies that were known to the husband, then the transaction stands, the sale is good, woman is the owner of the land, and husband gets to eat the peros of the land. But if she pays for this land with monies that were otherwise unknown to the husband, lo kansa. And I will say, ultimately, again, the woman does not acquire this land. Habal Omer, lo macharti ela kedei laharos hamoos shetamna. Because the husband could say to his wife, I was only selling you this land to discover your hidden trove of money. And therefore, again, Rabbi said, therefore, she will not acquire the land. However, Rabbi said, everyone will agree in what case? In the case of matana, in the case where a husband gifts a land to the wife, everyone will agree that what? That she acquires the land. Why? Because Rabbi said, in that case, there could be no claim that I was trying to discover unknown monies, since halacha lemaisa, again, we're not dealing with the exchange of money. Therefore, all will agree that when husband gifts the property to the wife, then ultimately, again, that transaction will stand. Shkoyach, and I'll say, stop over here.
In both situations, the husband selling the field, his intention would have been to sell it for hidden funds. In one case, he's successful, and one case.